Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another reality show, everyone. All right. Pipe down now. Pipe down. We've got a lot to cover today. How is everybody? I'm your host, Golden Hawk. And oh my God, I'm having a fabulous day today. It was 65 degrees, sunny and beautiful. I was hiking all day in the woods. And I'll tell you, boy, the energy in the forest is magical. There were these subtle beings all day long. There were faces in the trees. There were shadows and contrast that was dancing. I had my camera, my phone with me, and I let the forest know we're going to do a photo shoot here today. And these magical beings were all giggling and kind of raising their energy so I would notice them because everybody wanted to be in the photo op today. I have a ton of pictures that I posted on my Facebook page. Check them out. And I would just tell you that when you look at them, keep your imagination open. Stay really free-flowing. Take some nice deep breaths because the subtle energy is absolutely in the picture, and they will come and dance with you right through the computer if you're open to the space. And that's why they wanted to come home and be in the everything. Or what did I put? I called the photo album "There's Magic in the Subtle." Now, the reason why I'm sharing this with you is because tonight's guest is magical. She's Kat Parenti Hammid. She's an incredible woman who has spent on and off the last 20 years or 30 years?
20.
20? Okay, I'm not here to age you, my love. She has spent the last 20 years living both in the United States and in Afghanistan. And what I'm very excited about to have Kat share on tonight's show is the subtleties of living in a culture and living in a country that if you're like most Americans who have never even stepped foot on the soil of the Middle East, we have all these preconceived notions of what they're like and who they're like. And, you know, I won't even speak for anybody else. I'll just speak for myself kind of as your basic example, you know, that the media has just painted the Middle East as, you know, these really horrendous beings, horrendous people that just fight and kill and, you know, jihads and, you know, slamming into the buildings in New York City. And you know what? There are mothers, there are fathers, there are aunts, there are uncles, there are children, just like me and you. And the culture is absolutely different, which Kat is going to share with us stories about the difference, but difference not in a negative, by God, not even close. The difference in the nuance of how they care for each other and their traditions. And the culture is so rich in how they treat their women. And, you know, this is not just about women being cloaked behind veils with their eyes showing. There's purpose to that that goes much deeper than what we would consider to be an abusive experience. And I am just delighted that you're here tonight, Kitty Kat.
Oh,
I love you, love.
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
It's delightful.
So how are you?
Really great. Everything is really, really great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So now Kat has been on the show before, and she talked a lot about, you know, her roots growing up. I mean, Kat grew up in Brooklyn. God bless. Hey, big shout out to Brooklyn. My parents grew up in Brooklyn.
All right.
So when, you know, we can cover that a little bit, but like I said, today when me and Kat spoke before the show, this is the energy of this moment is definitely screaming subtle, the subtleties. So Kat has generously shared with me these phenomenal photos that she has taken over the years, and you know, I want to share some stories about. Because I love that, you know, when you're saying the cultural differences, like them inviting you into their house for 3 days and let's share stories about this amazing, beautiful culture that I would bet 80%, and that's probably a low number, 80% of Americans have no idea about.
Okay. Okay, where do you want to start, Goldie? Do you want to start with the pictures, or do you want me to just give a few thumb sketch brushes of how I got there? Or
Yeah. Let's give it, as the audience gets to know you, we can do less of that, but I want them to get to know. You know, how does a girl who grows up in Brooklyn end up in Afghanistan? That's quite the bridge.
Yeah, it really is.
Indeed, indeed.
Well, I've had visions of Afghanistan since I'm 3 years of age. Now, of course, when you're 3 years old, you don't know that. So you're just seeing something in your mind's eye.
Right.
So I was seeing these visions of this beautiful, dark gold-colored plain and the purplish-brown mountains in the distance. And in my vision, even though I was three, actually, but in my vision, I was 14 years old. And I had a black and red dress with all this embroidery on it and coins and buttons. And I was stirring a pot. I had pantaloons. And then I was stirring a pot over a fire. And that was the vision that I saw from like age 3 to age 5 in my mind when I was playing downstairs.
Huh.
Because we lived in this big red apartment building with like 50 other families, and all the kids would go downstairs to play, and one of the neighbors who lived on the ground floor would keep an eye on us, so to speak.
Right, right.
Okay, so that was the first thing, but again, I didn't know anything. Okay,
right.
Then.
But you did know it was reoccurring. I mean, that much you did know.
Absolutely.
Okay.
That was a common theme. Every time I went down to play and I played in this empty flower pot that stood in front of the house and I put grass and leaves and pretended I was stirring it with a stick, I would see this vision.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
All right. The next thing that happened was I was fascinated by the gypsies. So when I was 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, every Halloween I would be a gypsy. And then at age 13, I did a term paper on the origin of the gypsies, and I received an award for that. And I thought, wow, this is fascinating. I would love to meet some gypsies in actuality.
Okay.
All right. So here I am, didn't meet any gypsies. Here I am, 18 years of age, and my girlfriend and I go into Manhattan on a shopping trip. And on the way back to the subway, we see a palm reading place. My girlfriend says, oh, let's go in there and get our palms read. I thought, wow, perfect. Gypsies, palms, great.
Right.
I walk into the shop, Goldie, and I'm telling you, it was, did you ever let an air out of a big balloon?
Yes, with that wonderful.
Yeah. That's right.
Okay.
The minute I stepped into the shop, that's what happened. All the air went out of the balloon. And I knew that these were not the people I was searching for. So we had our palms read and we went home. I didn't mention any of this to my girlfriend. I mean, this just went on in my own brain.
Okay.
Okay. Then, actually from age 11 onwards, I had these words going in my head. Over and over. Sonali Das Gupta, Sonali Das Gupta, Sonali Das Gupta. I was like, okay. Had no clue what it was. Again, never mentioned it to anybody. It was just going around in my head. Then I grow up subsequently. I decide I want to go to Afghanistan. Again, no clue, no connection to anything that I've just told you. This driving force, I must go to Afghanistan. Okay, age 13 onwards, I have a recurring dream. Now, this is not a vision. This is an actual dream.
Okay.
Same dream. Very tall man, kind of darkish skin. I'm married to him. We live in his country. His country is at war, and I'm helping him. over and over.
Huh.
Okay. Anyway, driven to go to Afghanistan. Don't know why. Meet
well,
somebody.
You didn't put it together with the dream at all? Like, you
not,
didn't think?
Nothing.
Okay. You know, it's amazing what the conscious does. And see, the subconscious plays the whole deal, and the conscious picks up what it does, and it does what it doesn't.
Exactly.
Because so, it happens to me as well. Oh, but please, continue.
Okay, yeah. So I had no idea. All I knew is I had to go to Afghanistan. Of course, everybody thought I was nuts because, you know, we're talking 70s now, people.
Right.
So in the 70s. You know, it's like, what? You're going where?
Okay, so wait a minute. Question. So what was the temperature, so to speak, between the United States and Afghanistan in the 70s?
Distant but friendly, because the United States went over there and found out that basically it was a pile of mountains and sand, had no oil, so the interest, you know, kind of dropped down to maybe 10%.
Okay, okay.
But we did put the Peace Corps in there. We did build roads and bridges and waterways for them.
Okay.
So it wasn't like, you know, total, I'm going to ignore you totally, but I'm just not going to do a big deal about it.
Okay.
And the reason we even did that is because guess where Afghanistan is, Goldie?
Well, I'm assuming it's right next door to one of the ones we want to keep an eye on.
Yes, Russia.
Oh, Russia? Oh, it's not next door to, like, Iraq or Iran or one of those?
Oh, honey, that's the Middle East. Afghanistan is the Near East.
Oh.
Okay,
I didn't know that.
Let me give
okay.
everybody a mental picture, okay?
Please.
Everybody knows Europe, right? Okay.
Well, let's not assume that because geography is not my strong suit, so.
Okay.
Okay.
England, France, Germany.
Okay.
Okay. Is that it? All right, so I'm going to take you by steps over so everybody understands where this is.
Okay.
So just say England. You're traveling now. You're going overland.
Right.
England, France, Holland, Germany, Italy, Yugoslavia, Romania, blah, blah, Greece, Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, India.
Wow, okay.
Middle East is down below that, okay?
Okay?
Middle East is kind of east of Africa, and Africa is below Europe. You know that? Okay. Oh, well, now you know.
Do I have to swear that? Okay, I know that. I'm kidding. See, but I'll be honest with you, see, because I have not traveled the world, it's not even just the geography. You know, I really get that. I don't know a lot about these countries other than what America has chosen to tell me.
Oh, you. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's most people's experience, Goldie. You're not alone, believe me.
No, indeed. But I believe that we are misinformed.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I'm really loving, you know, the idea of the show because, you know, the unity of consciousness is what is here now. So it's really time for us to stop, you know, blindly following, you know, the propaganda and start really genuinely getting to know, even if it's not a matter of us visiting the country themselves, let's talk to people who have, regular people, not people from the news, not people from politics,
right.
You know, people that had relationships with the common people.
The common people, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Okay,
yeah.
So.
Okay.
Decided to go to Afghanistan.
Okay.
And I get myself together and I find out that there is a Land Rover leaving from England to go to India and back again, and it takes 6 months.
Wow.
I said, hey, that's for me.
There's my
called
ticket.
Up, got the ticket, got on the Land Rover with all the, I got the last ticket.
Now,
are
you doing this by yourself?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't, oh my, I would barely go to the movies by myself. I really think that when your soul wants you to move someplace, you go.
Absolutely.
Indeed.
Yeah,
well, but this is pretty amazing. How old were you at this time?
23.
Yeah, that's young.
Very young.
Young
and foolish.
Yeah, namaste, my friend. That's. it's a beautiful thing, though, because, you know, you got to your vision. That's really the key in all this.
That's the point. And all my friends had the exact same reaction you did. You're going by yourself?
Well, yeah. I mean, because I would assume that, because let me ask you a question. Did you know anything about the culture going in?
Nope.
Did you investigate it at the library or any kind of resources at the time?
The only investigation I did was I picked up the world map and saw that the color of the country of Afghanistan was violet. And I said, that's where I'm going.
So if it was green based on those map makers, your destiny might have been someplace else. No, I'm only
joking.
That's
correct.
and you weren't, so it was just sheer, like you were just driven by something you might not know how to, just driven. I really understand that
there.
Now. Wow.
Have to go there. Couldn't explain it. Thank God nobody asked me why, because I had no answer for them.
Right, well, but I think when you're driven, truth be told, even if they ask you why, it doesn't, just because you have no answer, I don't have a reason, I just am.
Right, that's it. Gotta do
yeah.
it.
And I really do honor that because I think, like I said, I've been talking about this with some friends today. When the soul awakens in a person's being, which I believe is the soul's choice to do, I've been inviting my soul to come into my being, but when it does waken up, it will just put you in places. There's no rhyme or reason to it. You have to be open to the spontaneousness. You have to be open to that it might not fit, you know, your parents' point of view if you happen to be young, or even your friends' point of view if you're in a different age group, and be willing to follow that, the plan of the spontaneity, the plan of the soul, because ultimately that's where your joy comes from, not from the safety of the tribe,
absolutely,
but from the trust of the soul within.
Yes.
That's a powerful message, because I really, you know, because it's not my journey to go to Afghanistan, if you had said that to me, I would have been frightened. Like I said, I was frightened. I was frightened to go to New York City, and that's like literally 40 minutes away from me. that to me was a culture that was, because, I mean, that was, my journey was actually just a different space. But, you know, where now, if I go to the woods at night alone, people think I'm crazy, but my soul guides me to do so, so I do.
Yes, exactly.
Indeed. Okay. I love you, Kat. Okay, so you're on your way on this 6-month caravan to
yes. God knows where. There was one little tiny problem.
Okay.
I'm an Italian. I grew up in New York. Well, I grew up in Brooklyn, but New York, Brooklyn, same thing.
Right.
I was exposed to many cultures. As you know, New York has many cultures.
Right.
So my parents were Polish and Italian. My father worked as a chief clerk on a shipping line, so we had foreigners to the house all the time for dinner, and they would bring gifts and all this kind of stuff.
Okay.
So I grew up in a very international household.
Mm.
Okay. I get on the Land Rover, and God bless them, they're English, Australian, and New Zealanders. Now, nothing wrong with these people.
Right.
However, they are so insular that all they want to do, all these countries we pass through, all they want to do, and I swear to you, it's the truth, eat chips and Spam.
Really?
Right.
So they weren't really, they didn't want to go into the cultures, dive into the cultures that they had a position to dive into.
No.
Huh. Chips and Spam, eh?
I was like, hey, you know, that's your choice, not mine. And the greatest insult was when I made them Italian food and they poured Worcestershire sauce all over it. I said, it's time to leave these people.
I don't think they get it.
No, they don't get it.
This is what happens, though, you know, truly when you mix cultures and you don't know. I mean, that's the funny part. Yeah.
So
okay.
I left them. I found some people in Italy. They had a Volkswagen bus, and it was a couple. And I said, hey, I'm going east. Would you like, you know, an extra person to help pay the expenses, et cetera? And I said, come right along, kiddo.
Awesome.
So I went the rest of the way with these people.
Wow.
And
I mean,
that's how I got to Afghanistan.
Okay, so do you remember
now,
your first day?
These people were Canadians.
Okay.
And they were like I was. They wanted to go to the bazaars. They wanted to see the shops. They wanted to talk to the people, eat the food, you know, as best as we could. So the first group of people that I met in England, that we took the Land Rover, I must have been with them all of 10 days. So we go 10 days. Then these people that I'm, the Canadians, Canadian couple that I meet up with, it took us 4 months to get from Italy, Greece, Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan.
Right. Because you were diving deeper. You were going into the culture.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. Fabulous.
It was.
So if you had to give a general gift, like what would you say the general gift was of those 4 months?
Oh, my God.
For self.
The gift to see into people's souls, have them see into yours through your eyes, and be able to converse without words and feel the love coming from them. And, mutual, the exchange of love.
Wow, Kat.
It was phenomenal.
Oh, that's awesome. That is the enlightened societies. That's where we're going.
Hopefully.
It's already here. Just travel internationally.
Right, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, that's
wow.
what it was like. And that was the gift of it. It wasn't racing through the countries like our behinds were on fire and eating chips and spam to get God knows where at God knows what speed.
Right.
It was taking the time to enjoy, to sit down with them. Every time we hit a border, we sat down with the customs officials and learned 30 phrases in the local language. So we wouldn't be totally crippled.
Right.
And
wow.
we could at least say, good morning, please, thank you, where is, how much, you know, simple stuff.
Well, simple, but right. But when, see, you know what, it's so funny. Your whole description right now is so eloquently showing there are people who are all about the outcome and there are people who are about the journey.
Yes.
And what a beautiful example of, you know, when you're about the outcome, spam and chips.
Right on.
When you're about the journey, the depth and the richness of moments that are just, it's not about, you know, winning lotteries or necessarily meeting the soulmate at that point, meaning meeting the soulmate for the rest of your life. It's just about another human being to another. It's the namaste. It's the seeing the light, feeling the love, not knowing the language, and transcending it anyways.
That's right. That was the whole thing.
Can I come with you next time?
Sure.
I'm going to save my money. I'm going to go with you one time. I am. I think I am. If you're open to, you know, having a little golden hawk fly behind you. I won't fly ahead of you, I promise. Because I'm still nervous. But your depiction makes me want to explore this.
Oh, well, I'm glad to hear that, actually.
Yeah, well, because this is what it's all about. You know, I can remember a time, I must have been about 5 years old. My parents used to take us, we used to go to Florida for like 10 days. Every year, you know, the vacation, you drive to Florida, you go to a hotel and you stay at a pool for 10 days.
Yeah, we used
and I
to
remember,
go to Cape Cod. Yeah.
Pardon?
We used to go to Cape Cod like that, yeah.
Okay, same premise. But I remember one particular vacation, a little boy, Spanish little boy, was at the hotel. I didn't speak a stitch of Spanish. He didn't speak a stitch of English every single day for, no lie, like 6-7 hours. We played together. We made up languages. It didn't even matter. And, you know, I'm just remembering speaking with you now about that experience, because we went beyond the words.
Exactly.
There is true divinity beyond the language.
Absolutely, because it's the soul that's meeting.
Wow.
Not the mind.
It really is.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, when they found out you were American, tell me some stories about how they reacted to, you know, quote unquote, your label of American.
Well, see, that's very funny because, now, remember, this is before all the nonsense, before the Soviets, before the Taliban. These people were an untouched, pristine culture like the Tibetans used to be.
Oh, wow.
So they had no concept of you're a German, a Greek, a Chinese, a Russian, an American. That was beyond their concept.
Really?
You were a guest in their country. And as a woman alone, they were bound to bring you into their homes to live with their womenfolk.
Wow.
That was the reaction to me. It was not, oh, great American, give me dollars.
Oh, I was thinking more like, oh, American, you know, keep away. I would assume they don't like Americans, right, like you're saying, the commerce of, right, that we looked at as a product.
Right on.
Right,
and
right.
It wasn't anything like that. You know, because at that time, they really were a pristine culture. Now, you have to understand something. What you have to understand is the modern section of Kabul, which is the capital of Afghanistan.
Okay.
The, quote, modern section of that city is an area of about 4 miles square. Got it?
Yeah. Yeah, they're a simple culture, but they're deep.
Right on.
Right.
And the rest of the country is living like they've lived in the 12th century, in the adobe villages that some of the Native Americans live in the Southwest here. They live in these adobe villages. So these people don't have the concepts that the, let's say, more westernized Afghans have in the 4 mile square area.
Wow.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Yeah.
Look, quick question. Is TV available in, and then the next question, if it is American TV available at the time you're talking of?
No. The only thing they had was Radio Afghanistan Kabul. Radio Afghanistan Kabul. That was it, kid.
Okay. So they really are pristine. Okay. Wow.
And they only played, and that was only in the capital because nobody else had electricity.
Oh, wow.
So that was only in the old 4 mile square of the capital that you had Radio Afghanistan Kabul, and they played, of course, all the songs of the current famous singers, which I recorded, by the way.
Wait, what do you mean all? Oh, God. So these are Afghanistan singers, or are you saying American singers? No,
Afghan singers.
Okay, no. Everybody is, okay, everything going on here is their culture, they are kind of in a bubble, so to speak.
That's right.
Okay, and I would assume they were content being in that bubble.
They were.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, what's that old saying? I cried because I had no shoes. Then I saw the man who had no feet.
Right.
Okay. They had no feet, but they had nothing. Believe me, I'm using this very loosely. They had a very, very rich culture. But I'm just saying there was no problem because they really had nothing to compare it to. They didn't have TV blasting at them 24/7 internationally. They didn't have iPhones, iPods, blackberries, blueberries, and strawberries. You know what I mean? No cell phones, no telephones, nothing, kid. Nothing.
Well, and no McDonald's and no Gap shoes and no
right.
Because, you know, it reminds me of, you know, how the didn't there used to be like Christian or these people that would go into like the forest and start trying to teach the Aborigines Christian ways?
Yeah.
You know, they're in the jungle. They're totally self-sufficient. They
right.
have no they didn't come out saying, "Listen, we want to be like you." It's like it always seems to be if it's not the American, the English. And,
yeah,
and the English Americans that have this thing, yeah, that they want to go out there and make everybody like us.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
It's like a big cloning thing. Yeah, it's really, it's kind of nauseating, to be honest.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. The good thing was that Afghanistan was and is a Muslim country, and Muslim countries don't allow that crap. They'll cut your head off for that stuff.
For what, the Christianity stuff?
Yeah, because you're interfering with their belief system.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed.
I mean, the other people in the forest, their belief systems were more animistic.
Right.
But this isn't, you know, Islam, Buddhism, Christianity. These are established religions. And if you have people practicing their religion in a majority, that's like trying to go into the Vatican and convert them to Buddhism. I mean, come on.
Yeah, exactly. Right, right.
It ain't
gonna happen. And then you're right. And the minute we found out that there was no oil, that the truth is, you know, we're not going to go over there to convert them because we don't want what they have. And yet, of course, as time unveiled itself and unfolded, we wanted what they had, which was the geographical where they were located, right? I mean, that's
right. That's right. That's what the Russians wanted. Because the Russians, see, I studied Russian in college. I had 6 hours a day. History, geography, language, literature, you know, the whole Megillah.
Right.
So the Russians, since the time of Peter the Great, wanted a warm water port.
Mm.
And the closest one is the Indian Ocean. So they figured they'd step on Afghanistan, because that's nothing. And then they take over Pakistan, which is a very small country also.
Mm.
And India was fairly friendly with the Russians. So they'd have the old warm water port. That was the plan. That is why they attacked Afghanistan.
So they attacked because they wanted the land.
They wanted to control that, control Pakistan, so they'd have the warm water port.
And was that successful? I don't even know, to be quite honest.
No, well, no, because the Afghans, God bless their souls, they have a saying in Afghanistan. If we love you, we will do anything for you. And if we hate you, we will do anything to you.
Oh,
and
wow.
That's
what excuse me. Wow.
Yeah, they remind me of my relatives, the New York Italians. I mean, you know.
Well, they're very, that does sound very American, to be quite honest.
Doesn't it? Doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, my relatives are the kindest, most generous people in the world. If you cross them, God help you, you know?
Yeah, no, Italians, Jews, I grew up
yeah.
in a Jewish household. Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
So the Afghans actually beat, so to speak, they did not let the Russians in when the Russians came to try and come through there. They
no,
kind of put up
true.
Their... Okay, I'm asking. So,
okay, what happened is the Russians invaded Afghanistan. They had this whole scheme, and what they, this is like so hideous. This is in my other books. It's not in this book, but I'll just tell you this one little thing, okay?
Okay.
All right. So what they did, and how I know this, is because I had friends all across the board. I had high nobility in the Afghan government, merchant class people, nomad people, and farmers. So I had a good cross-section of friends in every section of the culture, okay?
Okay, okay.
So I found out about the Soviet stuff from my friends in the ministries, who subsequently escaped and came to New York and told me the stories, okay?
Okay.
And those are in my other books. Those are later on. Okay, anyway, real quick. So what was done was, the Soviets came in under the they rolled the tanks over the border. They came in under the guise of friendship, first of all, before they rolled the tanks. They came in. They said, oh, we're going to help you out. We're going to help you modernize, because the king's brother-in-law took over in a bloodless coup when the king went for an eye operation in Italy, and he wanted to modernize really fast. The United States, we already discussed, There was no oil. They weren't going to send anybody over.
So right.
He turned to the Russians, the second most powerful country in the world, right?
Right. Well, at the time,
said,
anyway. Right.
Yeah. The Russians said, of course we'll help you. So they sent in all these so-called advisors. Okay, so here's the little picture I just want to show you.
Okay.
There's two offices. One's a very small office. The other one's a large office. In the beginning, the Afghan minister was in the large office, and the Soviet advisor was in the small office. You know what happened, don't you?
Of course, it flipped.
It flipped, hon. And when it flipped, Daoud, the president of Afghanistan, flipped out and said, "Dear God Almighty, these people are taking over." So then he said, "My dear brothers, I thank you for all the help you have given us," because this went on for about 4 or 5 years.
Okay.
"Thank you for all the help that you're giving us. And, you know, we can run the show now. We want to throw you a big party before you leave."
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So some of the ministers were very intuitive and avoided the big party with excuses and fled to Pakistan. And that's how they lived, and that's how they told me the stories. And they threw the big party, and the Russians brought in all this caviar and champagne and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And just say there was 100 ministers, say maybe 85 of them attended the party.
Okay.
And on the stroke of midnight, Goldie, the advisors to these people stood up, unholstered their guns, and blew their brains out.
So the Russians blew the government of Afghanistan? Wow.
Yes. And then
What year was this?
This was 1978, 79, end of 78, early 79.
Wow.
And they went into the palace and they killed the entire Afghan lineage. It was the women, the children, everybody. And they rolled the tanks over the border and took over Afghanistan.
Are they considered the owners, quote unquote, of the country to this day or no?
Nah. No way.
Good.
No way, Jose.
So Afghan fought back.
That's right. Very simply, without getting into a long story, because that's my other books, and I'll tell stories from that.
Okay.
But the Afghans fought back with the help. Now, you know, believe this or not, I don't know if you guys saw the movie Charlie Wilson's War.
I did. Not that I understood it, but I did see it, yes.
Well, let me help you understand it real fast and real quick.
Okay.
After one of my times that I came home from Afghanistan because all this blood and everything was being spilled by the Soviets, I went to my local senator. You know, my two senators here are John Kyle and John McCain. And
okay.
Senator, all right. At that time, he was a congressman.
Right,
Congressman Kyle. And I said, "Look, these people are fighting with stick stones in their bare hands against Hind helicopters and missiles. We got to help these people out." So Kyle went to Texas, and Kyle got Charlie Wilson on board. And then the rest is the movie.
Really? Okay, I'm going to rent the movie again before our next talk on the air.
Yep. Yep.
Because it'll help me understand. And And you had a hand in that.
Yes, through Kyle. Yes.
Wow. You rock, kitty cat. I love it because you know what? When people have visions from 3 years old, you know that there's an influence to things that are happening. You know that they have that because it's part of the whole, that's the way the intelligence behind all of this works.
Absolutely.
Wow.
So that's.
You are a master storyteller, too. I love your stories. I do. I love
thank
them.
Thank you.
I don't care what time we're talking. I enjoy very much listening to you. So, okay, we're back in Afghanistan, Blood and Honor, a memoir from Brooklyn to Kabul.
Right.
And,
Let's do a couple of stories from the book. Okay, how about that?
Okay, and stories, if you can, where the culture is just so radically different than America would assume.
Okay.
The kindness. I love the idea of the kind. I don't think we look at the Afghans as kind people, and they're extraordinarily.
No, you don't.
But they are.
Very much so.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's break that whole image, you know, and these are first-person stories, you know, my friend.
Oh, yeah.
She's not getting this from reports. She lived it. And that's Everybody knows who talks to me. First person, man. You come to me first person. Don't pontificate. Tell me your experiences, because I really do honor those that live the experiences.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, these
yeah.
are all directly from the book.
Okay.
Okay. So one day, Sunshine was, remember I said I traveled with a Canadian couple?
Uh-huh.
Dustin and Sunshine.
Oh.
Is that cute?
Yeah, that is so, you know, of course. You can't write better fiction, you know. This is just
That's
beautiful
right.
stuff.
Truth is better than fiction, honest
it,
to God.
Yes,
okay,
it really
so
is.
Sunshine.
Okay, so tell us about Sunshine.
Sunshine and I decide we're going to walk down to the so-called general store, which was this tiny little shop, because we knew that in that so-called general store, they sold bottles of American Coca-Cola.
Okay.
And we've been in Afghanistan for, you know, a couple of months now, so we're like, hey, let's get some American stuff. Okay. So we go into the shop, and this guy comes out, and he's about 5'4", and he has the bluest eyes I've ever seen and the copper color skin. And, you know, he's medium build. He's not fat. He's not thin. And he's got the traditional clothing on. It's pale blue, that long shirt that everybody's seen on TV, and the pantaloons everybody's seen on TV.
Okay.
And he's got a Western light gray suit jacket on the top because this was winter. And he has a turban on his head, and the skull cap is multicolor. And then he's got the, you know, the turban part that winds around. And
okay.
that's kind of a gray also. He's very sweet, and, you know, we pull out our stock phrases of what we want and how much it is and everything, and he smiles, and he's very kind and, you know, very sweet. And he, you know, says he's going to go in the back and get us the Coca-Cola. So we're wandering around this little shop, and we're waiting for this guy to come out with the two bottles of Coke, and we turn down one of the little aisles, and kaboom, there's the guy with the blue eyes, with the turban, with the jacket, with the thing, and he's coming towards us from the front door. And we kind of stared at him, and he kind of stared at us, and then the guy with the Coke bottles comes. And we all look at each other, and we burst out hysterically laughing. They're identical twin brothers dressed identically.
You know, that could definitely startle a person. Like, you know, you just never know what's in those Coke bottles you're getting in Afghanistan. There's magic in, even though, well, let me ask you a question. Did you feel the magic of the land?
Oh, God, yes.
You know, because isn't this the basically the area where, you know, these major religions all came into fruition? I mean, the whole, whether it's
yes.
Near East or Middle East, that is the, I think,
yes.
I, you know, that's a major area from a ley line and a magnetic point of view, so to speak.
Absolutely. It was
yeah.
very, very special. The first time I drove into Afghanistan with Dustin and Sunshine, we stopped the bus. I climbed over a hill, a very small hill, a rise, not even a hill. I climbed over this rise, and I fell on my knees, and I looked at the purplish-brown mountains, and I said, thank God I've come home, and wondered what on earth I was talking about. But that was
really?
The feeling. And then, oh, the other thing, again, about the land, the nomads that I met this group of nomads on one of my trips, and they were out, you know, in the middle of that golden-colored plain with the purplish-brown mountains in the distance,
right.
and they pulled me into their camp, and they sat me down, and they gave me tea, and, you know, I didn't speak their language. They didn't speak those. I spoke Dari, D-A-R-I, which is a form of Farsi, and they spoke Pashto, and at that time I didn't know any Pashto.
Okay.
And they're chattering away at me and smiling and giving me tea and dried mulberries and all kinds of stuff. And the chief's wife comes out, and she just had a baby, and the kid must be about 6 months old. And the two of them are just gorgeous. Actually, that's one of the pictures. Goldie, why don't you bring that picture up? You see the woman with the baby?
Is this in the 33
yes.
pictures?
Yeah,
do you know what number it is? Oh, here, well, I'll find it. I'll find it.
Let's see. It's probably maybe third one down or something. Yeah,
okay.
The first one is, you see it?
Third one down. Okay, yes, yes, yes. Nomadic
right
Chief
there.
White. Oh,
there
she's beautiful.
Isn't she gorgeous?
She's
there
beautiful.
You go.
Yeah.
And there's the baby. And look at that dress. My God. And the baby. I mean, just phenomenal.
Yeah, very decorative. Very decorative.
Extremely. With all the jewelry, the silver jewelry and the coins and the buttons. The dresses weigh about 15 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah, because they're all, you know, all this stuff on. Okay,
no, but
so
I
anyway.
Also assume this is also clothing that makes sense for the desert, I would assume.
Yes, absolutely. And the women make their own dresses, and they keep adding to it.
Oh, is that why it gets so decorative?
That's right. They just keep going and going and going. Just like you and I would buy another gold chain or another pair of hoop earrings. The difference is we would not wear them simultaneously. We wouldn't wear every single pair of earrings.
Well, but they're nomads, so I assume they're, does that mean
exactly.
that they basically move around? So, exactly.
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 The woman wears the wealth of her family on her back. And
really?
When they need something that they do not have, that they desire, like tea and sugar, they go into a town, and she goes to the salt cellar, the sugar cellar, or the tea cellar, whatever it is, and she wants whatever, 2 pounds of tea or whatever, and they tell her, you know, how much it is, and she takes off a piece of jewelry, which is the equivalent, and gives him that instead of giving him money.
So is there a lot of bartering going on in Afghanistan?
There was.
Not
that
so much
was
anymore.
Primarily, that was the nomad thing. Yeah, there was bartering because, oh, this is another interesting thing.
Okay.
People that were very poor, they would go and they would pick from the mountains, the hillsides, they would pick the wild dill, coriander, leeks, mint, and they would come down and they would give that to the little adobe restaurants that they used in their foods, and in return, they'd get food.
Oh, excellent.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that's an ecosystem. That's an ecosystem.
Yeah.
Exactly. You have what I want. You help me. I help you. We all turn. It's all beautiful.
Yeah, win-win.
Win-win. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I always say that there's a third win, and that's the spirit behind it all.
Oh, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So back to the nomad woman.
Okay.
So she shows me the baby, and I'm sitting there drinking the tea and everything, and all of a sudden a swarm of kids comes up, and they grab a hold of me, and they pull me to my feet, and they're pulling on my clothes, and they want me to go with them. So they're taking me, like, on a little tour around the camp, and everybody's smiling and talking to me in their own language, and I'm smiling back and, you know, greeting them in my own way. And all of a sudden, we round the corner of a tent, and there in the distance, I see the purplish-brown mountains on the golden-colored plains, and there's a girl of 14 with one of these dresses stirring a pot over a fire.
So that's your vision.
And it just exploded in my brain. It was like a star landed in my third eye, just exploded in my head. And I saw that is the vision I've been having since I'm 3 years old.
Wow.
And that's why it wasn't the gypsies. It was these people, the Afghan Pashtun nomads.
Wow.
Just incredible.
Well, I mean, I would imagine you remember that moment, the smells, the feelings, the temperature, the
yes,
sound.
Everything.
Yeah, huh. Because it's like that. Those are soul contracted moments.
That's right. Soul memories.
Yeah.
And I went out from the camp, and I climbed a bluff, and I stood on the bluff, and the winds came up and buffeted my clothes around me, and I stood straight into the wind, and it seemed like fingers were caressing my head and my hair. It was an incredible feeling. I felt all this power flow into me, and I felt as if I had been there before as a warrior, a priestess, something. I couldn't name it.
Right.
But for the first time since I was a very young child, I had such a feeling of peace and belonging. And that was my first memory.
Wow. That's deep, babe.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful you had the courage and the inner knowingness to create that for yourself, because by you doing that, literally every single person on the planet now has an easier time to finding their soul contracts, because the more people that find them, the easier it is for those behind them to find theirs.
Absolutely.
So I want to thank you, because I believe it's easier for me to find my soul purpose because, Kat, you went into territories that your soul guided you, and you found your soul purpose.
Yes.
I mean that with all sincerity.
I know. And you, believe me, you may not have gone to Afghanistan, my dear friend, but the work that you do now allows people to find their soul contracts by bringing different people on your show to share their experiences.
Oh, thank you.
You're doing the same thing, only differently.
Mwah. I love you, babe. Indeed. It must be so, because I feel such, there's a depth I have been feeling, and truly, 2010, really, I'm feeling this connection with my guests that you're absolutely right. You know, I don't care if someone says, why are you having that person on? I don't, because I feel this person should be on it. It is the language beyond words, because I set the intention for my show to radiate the heart language. And I was like, I know we can't just kind of sit here in silence for 2 hours. You know, people might not tune in. They need something to keep the mind, you know, occupied. And
absolutely.
But the energy, without a doubt, the energy that is really my baby. You know how we had that discussion?
Oh yes.
She radiates from the heart.
That's right.
And thank you for that. Indeed.
Oh, you're
indeed.
Welcome.
And I'm so grateful, though, because I really do understand this as the conscious building of those before, because what we're creating, our children will have, you know, because what's that saying? Step up on the shoulders of those behind you and stand tall. You know, it's like all of it, you know, for you to go into another country might have seemed crazy to your friends, but from your point of view, you know, even though I have seen people deny their soul contracts, and really, really, they're miserable.
Absolutely.
They're miserable. It's like because they don't have I don't know what it is, whether it's courage or just the trust in themselves that I know it sounds crazy, it's just what I got to do.
That's right.
Wow. Oh, my hands are buzzing right now again, too.
You know what that is.
We do know what that is. Yes, namaste.
You ready?
So, okay. Pardon? Hello? Kat? Okay. You're still up on my switchboard, so we can't hear you. If you want, just call back in. There you go. Okay, so she'll call back in. See, this is also what happens when the energy goes high. The energy goes high. And we start, the circuits start blowing on switchboards, computers. It's truly amazing, actually. It's truly amazing. So, okay, she's back. Let me click her on. Hey, love, this
she's
is
back.
What happens. Yeah, no, this is no lie, this is because we just blew a circuit in the frequency that we go into. Because I could see your number and I could tell we, okay, and there's no panic because it's the heart. The heart, when the heart creates chaos, you learn to surrender, not to
Absolutely.
Fight.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to hear another funny story?
Oh, you know I do.
Okay. It's my friend Sunshine again.
Okay.
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 So Sunshine takes it into her head that she wants to buy a turtleneck sweater.
Okay.
We go, okay, because remember, we're in the 4 mile square area where
okay.
we can get such things as American clothing in maybe 2 shops. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we go into the shop and she picks out, she looks at this, you know, she sees these things and she picks out this one and she tries it on. And unfortunately, it's way too big. So she says, no, you know, I'm not going to be able to purchase this because it's too big. Well, now, do you think that an Afghan merchant is going to be beaten by a size? I don't think so. So he says to us, no, he says, sit down and have tea, and I'll go and fix it. I'll take it to the tailor. All right.
Wow.
So he said, that's going to be, you know, 20 cents more. Okay, fine. So we give him the 20 cents. He goes off to the tailor. We're sitting there drinking the tea. We finish the pot of tea, which is about 5 half cups apiece. Okay. The guy comes back. He's grinning from ear to ear. He's totally happy. He gives her the sweater. She tries to sit on. Unfortunately, this thing is made of you know, I call clothes that are not cotton, wool, or silk, plastic. Okay.
Oh. Okay.
Let's call it polyester, all right?
Okay. Well, then that was big in the 70s, so that makes sense.
There
okay.
you go. Makes sense.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Okay, the sweater was polyester, okay? So she goes and put this thing on. Now, Western people, let's put it that way, people in Europe and America know that polyester requires a special sewing machine. The Afghans didn't know this. They threw it on the regular sewing machine. They give this back to her. And the whole thing, the sides are like, you know, somebody, like if you took a piece of material and you ran a needle up the side of it and then you knotted it on the top and the bottom, so it has all these, like, you know, like where the, it's all crinkled up.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I have a visual. My visual is, yeah, it's like permanently wrinkled.
Permanently wrinkled in the seams, so you can't get this thing on because it's shrunk like 4 sizes.
Oh,
God. So she can't get this thing on. And he says, you know, the equivalent of, don't worry about it. And he rips the whole thing out.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then he says, I'll go and fix it. So he goes. He goes out again, gives us more tea. This time he gives us, like, these hardtack cookies with it. Okay, great. God bless. We're sitting there eating, dunking these things in the tea and eating them and drinking the tea. And he comes back, and he's got, you know, he says, okay, try it on now. So she tries it on, and it's perfect.
Really?
You know what he did?
He went
to the other shop in town that carries these sweaters, got the correct size, and brought it back.
Oh, so he bought another shirt for her.
He bought another shirt. Is that
just to make the sale and to keep her happy.
Absolutely.
Oh.
Can you imagine if you and I went into a store today and they didn't have our size?
Yeah.
What are they going to do? They're going to run cross town to the other store? I don't think so.
Listen,
you know?
I'll be honest with you. I was in my 20s. I did a little test.
Yeah.
I went into, I don't know if it was Bloomingdale's or JCPenney. It wasn't JCPenney. It was one of the higher end stores.
Yeah.
I can't think of the name right now.
Macy's.
But,
Macy's.
Not Macy's. Just one of the higher end stores. It was in Stamford.
Okay.
I went in within a 24-hour period, one day and then the following day. One day I went in with makeup, high heels, dressed to the nine.
Okay.
And the service was pretty prompt, and they were. The next day I went in, sweatpants, no makeup. I didn't wear a bandana at the time, but pretty much, you know, a lower key, so to speak, on my personal.
Yeah.
I was completely ignored. I mean, literally, I went, are you going to help me? And they were like, we don't think you belong here.
Right, exactly.
It was such an amazing, it was so clear to me that I was judged by my cover.
Absolutely.
And because of that, I never shopped there again.
Right.
You know, because I have always said, I've always, wherever I lived, you know, even just around my own community, I'm always the one that's like, support the little shop, support the little bagel store that the guy and his whole family owns. You know, go to the store that it might be a few more cents, but you are looking eye to eye to the people who are utilizing the money you're giving. This
That's
isn't
right.
It, because I'm a big fan of mom and pops and the things that make communities authentic. Because if you drive through America today, they all look the same.
That's right.
Because of these chains. There's no authenticity anymore in small towns. Small towns look like large towns look like small towns. And it's very cloned energy.
Yes. You brought up something. You brought up a memory when you said, I always support the little shops. And you said, you know, the mom and pop bagel shop.
Yes.
Okay. Here's a visual.
Okay.
You guys, any of you who are listening, or you, Goldie, do you remember the movie Moonstruck with Cher?
Sure.
Okay. That was like when Nicolas Cage was first starting out as an actor.
Oh, wow. Huh. Okay. Let me go back to, yes, huh. That was, they were played in an Italian family, right?
That's right.
I'm
in
just
Brooklyn. And Nick
okay.
Listen to this. Nick worked in a bakery. Johnny Camerari, his name was in the film.
Wow,
and he worked
no
in a bakery.
Okay.
That bakery was around the corner from where I lived.
Really?
Is that hysterical or what?
Yeah, see, but that's where, you know, it's so funny because you know what they're showing, too? And it was actually in the movies. I mean, because Cher won an award for Moonstruck, I believe.
Yeah.
Culture. See, when everything becomes a chain, whether it's a Barnes & Noble or a Kentucky Fried Chicken or a McDonald's, I get that that's the American culture, but it's a culture that's not rich. It's a very shallow culture.
Yep.
Because it's all about the business, not about the extremes of each person that owns it, puts in their spices and you know, makes their type of clothing based on their own personal desires, likes, and dislikes. You know, it's like we have lost that in America. I believe it will come back again.
I think it's starting to.
Yeah, as things are starting to collapse.
Yes, right. We have no choice.
we have, you know, because it's like it's so bland.
Yes, exactly.
Because it's really amazing that, you know, like I said, I haven't really traveled much out of the country, but I've traveled a little bit within the interior of the United States. And, like, you know, it's amazing to me how, I mean, even places like Sedona, which is very, it's rich in the energies of the vortexes.
Right.
And there's some laws there that they have. Like, if you build there, you have to build, it has to blend in with the red rock. Like, you could
That's
not
right.
bring a blue stone, so to speak.
That's right.
But it does, you can't, you must, and I honor that. But the truth is, they're still bringing in the Pizza
right.
Huts. And it's like,
That's right.
you know, there's so many people living there. It's the easy sellout is the big name places.
Yep.
But
yeah,
it's like you sell your soul. It's like selling the soul of the people
True.
Out.
I've been here 26 years, and in the last 10 years, Sedona has become so commercial. I don't go there anymore.
I don't go there anymore either for the same reason.
Yeah, it's so commercial now. It's ridiculous. I like the other little towns nearby, like Cornville and places like that. But Sedona, forget Sedona, really.
You know, and it's, you know, it's like what we try to do across the board. Why do we have this need to everything be the same. You know, there's like this comfort. There's a belief in our heads that if we're the same, we're okay.
We're
and if we're not the same, we're safe. That's actually, you're right, that's the word. If we're the same, we're safe. But it's not safety. It's actually, it's like we're dumbing ourselves down because,
yes.
you know, all you have to do is look at the animal kingdom. The most
yes.
healthiest of dogs are the breeds
yes.
that are mutts.
Right.
They purebreds have hip issues. Purebreds
yes.
have all sorts of, you know, this, that, and the other thing. Go
yes.
because their bodies, the bloodline breaks down because you're not intermixing it. Well, the same with culture.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, we're having hip issues.
We're having hip issues. You know what's so interesting? The
yeah.
Afghan hound, the Afghan hound in the United States, these dogs are so inbred that they're stupid. And when I used to tell people that I had an Afghan hound in Afghanistan, they'd say, oh, God, they're very stupid. But the dogs in Afghanistan are not inbred. They're extremely intelligent.
Right.
So, yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so tell me about, let's see, where are we going to go? Have you ever been to an Afghan wedding?
Yes, I've been to an Afghan wedding.
Oh, share with us what that's like.
Well, it was my own wedding, actually.
I love you, Kat. Okay, only share what you're comfortable sharing, then.
but you're making me tell the secrets of the second book now. Hey.
I don't see. I'm you know, I'm definitely connecting with you. I'm in your field of awareness. I think that's a wonderful way to talk. So you got married in Afghanistan.
Okay. Now, I don't know if your listeners are aware of this or if you are, but I listen to the international news all the time, of course, because I'm very interested in Afghanistan.
Okay.
There's a place in Pakistan. It's called Waziristan. This is the hotbed of the Taliban. Okay.
Okay.
I married a man from Waziristan.
Okay.
Okay. These people are the toughest, roughest people that you could imagine. And this, I mean, the people, him and his, he was the chief of the tribe, him and his family, these people had hearts of gold. I mean, they were just phenomenal people.
Okay.
So, first of all, okay, do you want to know about the wedding? All right, I'll give you.
Yeah, we've got 52 minutes. I want to really speak with this because this is obviously a beautiful time in your life, and I think sharing this will really be, you know what I mean? When I said I want to hit that passion, this is
okay.
it.
This
okay.
We're going to hit the passion.
Exactly.
Okay, so the first thing I find out is that, not because of him, see,
okay.
He was educated abroad. So, I mean, you know, he and I spoke, well, we spoke three languages together to
okay.
make sure that we're understanding each other here.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. So, anyway, the first thing I find out is because he's the chief of the tribe, I have to be a virgin in order for him to marry me.
Okay.
And needless to say, I was not a virgin.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
So what's a girl to do when you need
what's
to just...
What's a girl to do?
How does one get around these cultural differences?
Real simple.
Okay.
You go to the bazaar, you know, with your friends, your women, Afghan women friends.
Okay.
And you purchase a little vial as big as your pinky
okay.
of pigeons. Blood.
Okay.
And then, okay, first, there's three nights to the wedding. You have to know that.
Please
okay?
share it. Absolutely. I'll know as long as you share it.
All right, okay. So there's three nights to the wedding, and I'll bring in with what happens with the pigeon's blood, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so the first night, you wear, the bride wears all old clothes and no makeup. And she sits with her eyes downcast, and she's supposed to cry because she's leaving the only home she's known with her mom and her dad and her brothers and her sisters.
Okay.
And then the women all surround her, and the women wedding guests all surround the bride, and they start singing very lewd songs and making very lewd jokes. And that's the first night of your wedding. And the young girls bring in this huge tambourine, and they start pounding on the tambourine and singing ridiculous things like, "I saw your husband's face, and his face is so black, it would scare the night, and you will be scared also." You know, silly stuff like this. And you're supposed to, you know, everybody's like trying to make fun and, you know, tell the bride how horrible everything is. And this is the first night, because they're trying to, like, discourage her from leaving home, in a sense. I mean, not really.
Okay, right. That's what the tradition is. In other words, make sure
that's
this is what you really want to do.
Right on. This is your
okay.
tradition, okay?
Okay, okay.
Second night, you get kind of dressed up, and they put the henna on your hands in the beautiful designs.
Yeah,
yeah. You do your hands and your feet.
Okay.
And you put some jewelry and you have some makeup. I mean, not the full regalia, but something.
Okay.
And you sit there and they bring in transvestites. And the transvestites do, again, very lewd dances. And there's more lewd jokes. And this is when all the gifts that will be given to the bride are displayed. All of the outfits, all of the jewelry, all of the household utensils that will be given to the bride by the groom's family and the wedding guests.
Huh.
So you go through this whole thing. But again, the bride is supposed to be kind of, you know, serious. Not crying, but not jumping up for joy or dancing or anything, right?
Okay, now is there food or alcohol?
Is there food? You bears like honey.
Okay. I guess that's a yes.
Oh, the food is unbelievable.
Okay, so you're feasting when this is happening.
Well, no, you're not doing diddly squat, except you're being on display as the bride, see?
Oh, I see.
Okay. Let me explain this. It starts at dusk. Okay, say dusk is like 6:30 or 7 o'clock, okay?
Okay.
It starts at dusk. You're on display as the bride. Nobody's really eating. They're doing soft drinks. They're doing like almonds and raisins type of thing, okay?
Okay, okay.
That's what they're doing, okay? If they're westernized, they're drinking liquor, okay?
Okay. But
this guy was traditional tribal. They didn't drink liquor in that village. So
okay.
We had the soft they had the soft drinks and the snacks. And the music, and the dancing, and the jokes, and the this, and the that. And then, at midnight, you eat. And you eat from midnight to like 2 in the morning.
Okay.
And then there's more joking, dancing, da-da-dee-da-da. And then there's dessert served close to dawn. And then there's more singing, dancing, joking, whatever. And then at dawn, everybody falls where they are and sleeps.
Literally.
And then they eventually
wow.
get up and go back to their homes until the second night, and the same thing happens. The bride and the groom are only allowed to eat when they're just about to pass out. They're allowed to not be on display anymore. The groom is displayed to the men in the men's house. They choose a house. Just say Goldie's house. Goldie's house and Kat's house are next door to each other.
Okay.
Kat is the bride. Goldie's a male. Goldie's the groom. So Goldie's house is going to have all the men guests, and Kat's house is going to have all the female guests, okay?
Okay, okay.
Okay, so the same thing goes on. When it's about over, Kat and the groom retire to a room by themselves, and they're allowed to eat, and then they're so exhausted they just pass out.
Okay.
Okay. Second night, same thing, but with the henna on the hands and the feet of the bride. So for two nights, I don't see this guy except like for 2 minutes when we're eating, and then we're separated, and we all go and sleep separately.
Okay.
Third night of the wedding. The bride is decorated from head to toe with something like 15 pounds of jewelry.
Oh, wow.
Now, here's something interesting. Gold jewelry. If they're very poor, it's silver. This guy was a chief. It was gold. Okay. So, the thing is, the color of the bride's dress is red dress, green pantaloons.
Okay.
That is the traditional color, red. In our culture, years ago, not today, women that wore red were prostitutes.
Okay.
Okay. The man, the groom, wears white from head to foot.
Okay.
Interesting, huh?
That is interesting.
Okay.
Now, a quick question. Does the man have to be a virgin to get married?
He's supposed to be.
Okay. Okay, so it is for both sexes. Okay,
yes,
okay.
But there's no way of checking with a man.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I mean, there's certainly a way of checking with a female.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyway, so third night of the wedding, you know, you're going through this for the third night, and you're going, oh, my God, I'm so glad. I can't wait for this to be over. But you're not saying anything. You're sitting there with your eyes downcast.
You must be somewhat tired by the third night, no? I mean,
you're exhausted. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Nice for this stuff?
Exactly. Okay.
So you're
sitting
there with all this regalia and all this finery and all this jewelry and all this that, blah, 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 blah. And then, just before midnight, you hear all these horns and gunshots and drums and da 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 da. And it's coming from next door. And the gates are thrown open. And the groom comes riding in on a white horse. And he's all dressed in white. And he's got the black eye makeup on his eyes.
Oh,
and
wow.
His feet have henna on them. And sometimes they even do the groom's hands have henna.
Okay.
Just like
okay.
the female. Only he doesn't have designs. He just has the straight color, right?
Okay.
And he's accompanied by all his brothers and first cousins and second cousins, all males. And they come riding in. No, he's on the horse. They're following him and playing the drums and the music and everything. And he comes into the courtyard. And then they help him dismount. Not that he doesn't know how, but this is the tradition. They
okay.
help him dismount. And then he's brought over to, like, the little stage that the bride is sitting on. And then he sits down next to her, and his eyes are downcast, and he's not looking at anybody either. And everybody's screaming, yelling, woohoo, you know, yah, yah, woo.
Sweet, yeah.
Then his mother comes. Oh,
sorry.
Yeah.
I just got, okay.
His mom comes, yep. And she places a mirror between the bride and the groom. And then the bride looks in the mirror first, and the groom looks in the mirror second, and that's supposed to be the first time they lay eyes on each other, which of course isn't true, because most marriages are your first cousin, and you grew up with them, you played with them, and you were separated at puberty. So now,
what's the symbolism of that? Do you know?
That this is the first time you're supposed to lay eyes on each other because you're both pure and you haven't, you know, fooled around.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Okay? All right.
Okay.
So then everybody goes wild, and then mom goes and brings a dish of this special pudding that's made for the weddings, and she brings it over, and she hands it to the groom, and he tastes it. And then he gives a spoon to the bride, and I taste it. And that's like the wedding cake, right?
Ah, indeed.
These guys don't do cake.
Okay.
Pudding.
Right.
So that's that. And then everybody goes wild in the music and the dancing and the screaming and the shouting. And the whole thing is just, you know, insanity personified. And then, now, of course, I didn't have any relatives there. So some of the groom's female relatives came, and they took a silk shawl, and in each end, one tied coins, one tied sugar, one tied cloves, and coins, sugar, cloves, and a little piece of gold jewelry, one in each corner. It's all tied up.
Okay.
And they carry this as a canopy. And another one carries the Quran over the head of the bride, as I slowly follow my husband across the courtyard to the bridal chamber.
Okay.
We get into the bridal chamber, and we lock the door, and we look at each other, and we're so tired, we can't even think. But we smile like, oh, thank God it's over. And
right.
Then I get the little vial of pigeon's blood, and I give it to my husband, and he throws it on the bridal sheet.
Right.
And we lay down, and we're fully dressed, and we just conk out. And then all of a sudden, about 30 or 40 minutes later, it must have passed about half an hour to an hour, and we hear the deep sound of this huge drum. Like, you know, we have conga drums.
Yeah.
Big conga drums. You hear this thing, boom, boom, boom. And it's coming closer and closer, and it's being played by the eunuchs and the transvestites. And all the guests are following them in a procession, closer and closer until they get to the door. And then Mom knocks on the door, and my husband, we wake up, of course, you know, my husband
right.
grabs the sheet with the blood and pushes it out, you know, opens the door, crack, and pushes the sheet out.
Right.
And they, all the women do, you know, how you've heard them do. You know, you heard them do that?
Yeah.
Ululations, they're called. And that means that the bride was a virgin.
Oh, outstanding.
That's how you get around that, girlfriend.
Oh, that is exquisite. Oh, I was so on that journey with you.
And then we
so
were
wait,
so
I
passed out.
Pardon? Pardon?
We were, the groom and I were so tired, we passed out.
Yeah, I was like, you know, good thing for the pigeon's blood. I was like, you didn't even make love that night because of sheer
no,
exhaustion.
No way.
Exactly.
No way. Oh, my God.
When the, pardon?
I said, what a trip that was, I'll tell you.
You know, now, the culture that, is this Afghan or is this his tribal way of being?
Okay.
In other words, are there other parts of Afghanistan that would do culturally, the marriage ceremony would be different? Or is that throughout Afghanistan, that's, you know, essentially how you do it, the men in this house, the
yeah.
women in this house?
That's
all
yes,
just part
yes,
of the culture?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
Yes, yes, yes.
Well,
that's what you're going to find. Except if you get westernized Afghans, then you're going to have what we have in America. Everybody's all together.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Okay.
See what I'm saying? And then
right.
you're probably not going to have a three-night wedding. You're probably going to have everything wrapped into one night, zip, zip, zoom.
Right, right, right. Because
but I love the traditional wedding. It was fabulous.
Yeah, well, you know, all of the traditions, you know, it's like we were just saying. It's like the mom-and-pop stores. You know, traditions are, they're a deep part, you know, of who we are, how we became to be. Because, like, I know a lot, like, the family I work for is Eastern Indian.
Okay.
And what I tend to find today is a lot of people, what they'll do is they did the traditional Indian wedding in India, and then they did another ceremony here
that's
for their
right.
friends, for the friends that couldn't make it, you know,
right.
halfway around the world. So
that's right.
And, you know, because I think there's beauty in both. You know,
absolutely.
There's clearly beauty in culture, and, you know, it's interesting because I was never a huge fan of Jewish culture.
Yes.
But I have had people on the show, and I've had friends of mine who have lived in Israel
yes.
and have told me it's such a different experience than just doing the regular Seder. You know,
right.
it's like people get the difference between a religious thing and culture.
Right.
You know, culture is I think you have to go to the countries to experience culture.
Absolutely.
You know, because it's part of the energy and the consciousness of the land as much as it is the actions of the people.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah,
wow.
You can't really separate that.
So now let me ask you a question. Were your children born in Afghanistan or in America?
No, America.
America?
Do they have dual citizenship
or I don't even know?
No,
pardon?
Once you're an American citizen, you know, if they choose, when they grow up, if they choose to have dual citizenship, perhaps they could, but they're Americans.
Okay, okay. And your husband now, is he works here or he works there or?
Well, my current husband is not Afghan. He's Egyptian.
Oh, this is not the same gentleman that you had the ceremony with. You're not with that same
man.
No. Okay. Okay.
No. He died in a car
accident. Oh, really?
That almost took my life. Yes. And took the life of our unborn child.
Really?
Yeah. That's,
well,
that's the second book.
Okay. Yeah, you have lived, you've lived a thousand lives, clearly, in this one lifetime.
I certainly have. That is the truth. And
yeah.
That's, you've just brought up something. That's an Afghan saying. I love you with 1,000 lives.
Hmm. So they absolutely recognize the reincarnation of existence.
Well, traditionally, no. But
oh, really?
No. Well, okay. We're talking religion now. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Do Catholics recognize reincarnation according to their religion? Absolutely not.
Correct.
But do we all have our own belief systems? Absolutely.
Okay. Okay.
Right.
Now, they're Hindu. What are, Muslims don't recognize? I see. Again, this is not a. I don't know much about Muslim religion.
They're more like Catholics. You know, the one lifetime trip.
Gotcha, gotcha, okay.
Which I could never adhere to nor believe, especially since after all these visions and everything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because that was another thing that I couldn't do with the Jews either. You know, this whole thing, you know, you're going to do this once. It's like,
yeah.
I didn't know what I knew, but I knew when I found, like, spirituality and shamanism,
yes,
that it clearly resonated deeper for me than, you know, the Torah. Yeah, I'm not saying the Bible doesn't have some good points to it. It just wasn't for me in this lifetime. I didn't have a resonance to it. I have my church is nature. That's my church.
Yeah. I tell people I'm a universalist. I believe in the core truth of all the religions. The core truth of the religions.
Yeah.
I will not follow the man-made laws of any religion.
Yeah, I'm with you totally on that. I have a real angst about joining things.
Yes.
Especially religious memberships.
Yes.
I remember when my Unity Church wanted, you know, come on, Goldie, be a member, and I'm like,
yes.
No, can do. I think it has to do with other lifetimes orders. The orders I was a part of.
Yes.
It just turns into vows, and vows. From what I'm learning, I had to disengage vows from other lifetimes that were affecting me in this lifetime.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, let's just play in the moment, but if I choose to skip over to the other side, I'm going to skip over to the other side, you know.
That's right, and I respect and love all of you, but I'm not joining.
Exactly, exactly.
This Mother's Day, I did something for myself for a change, and I took a retreat with the Sikh women, 2 days of Kundalini yoga, chanting, and meditation. And I loved every minute of it.
Sikh, what is that?
Okay, these are the people that dress in white and have the tall white turbans.
Okay.
And the men do not cut their hair, so they have the rolled beards. And they're kind of from northern India.
Okay.
Okay. And their prophet is Guru Nanak, and they are yogi masters, Reiki masters, you know. And the ashram that I went to, of course, is all Americans. They're American Sikhs. You're going to love it. The head of the ashram is a woman, and guess where she's as white as Middle America, and guess where she was born? Brooklyn.
Brooklyn's in there! running the ashram.
Right on. And you know, it's so funny, Goldie, because, you know, when people get to be like head of the ashram, everybody's like bowing down to them and everything.
Right.
Well, when she and I see each other, we just look at each other and scream Brooklyn and throw our arms around each other. And all these other people are like dying, like, oh, my God, you didn't bow down.
Yeah, well, because we, you know, there's another order going on here.
That's
Brooklyn
right.
in the house. The order of Brooklyn.
Right. And we've known each other for 20 years, and I've attended her stuff. I've never joined. I never will join. You know, I mean,
right.
I just,
but that's not, because I think, I like the way you said, as a universalist, join what? As long as we're joining as if there's separation from other,
exactly.
that's still in the illusion. There's just,
exactly.
there's beingness, there's isness, there's no need to defineness.
Yes, yes.
You know, we're definitely coming out of the defining aspect, and, you know, it's very interesting to watch the whole world being redefined, you know.
Yes.
I'm personally fascinated with it. And, of course, I'm fascinated with as long as I have or as long as I create for myself time in my temple, which is, for me, it's the woods.
Right.
When the world gets in my head and I'm spinning, I mean, I know when I wake up in the morning, if I have the day off, this is always nice, if I have the day off, and when I wake up in the morning within the first three thoughts, if it's money, is any one of those thoughts, I say to myself, get to the woods, Goldie, because
right.
I know it's not mine. I know it's in the air. I know it's coming through me. But when I'm in the woods, I don't have a care. I don't have a fear. I am,
right.
you know, it's whatever my soul brings me there. And because, I mean, at some point I would love to do, you know, jungles. I mean, you know, people are like,
oh, wow.
you know, there's bugs, and I'm like, no, that's kind of, you know, that's the next journey for me. You know, like whether it be Peru or Machu Picchu,
yes.
wherever. It, you know, I don't even care if it's, you know, necessarily a big one. You know, just,
yeah.
you know, because there's something about being on land that's not American. I remember when I first stepped foot. I mean, the couple of times I've been out of the country, even not out, when I first stepped off the airplane in Hawaii. Now, I know Hawaii is America, but it's not continental.
Right.
I could instantly feel that I was in a different space. In
Absolutely.
You can feel it. I've never been to Europe. I do have a desire to see some of the things in Europe, especially crop circles and things of that nature.
Yes, yes, yes.
Egypt, I would love to go to. Africa and Peru. I mean, I have a feeling the second half of my life,
you're going to travel.
Yeah, and I get the sense that by the time I'm going to travel, because I have a vision for the planet that there will come a day we will not need passports because it won't be about, you know, this agenda of how different we are. It'll be about the agenda of welcome, you know.
Yes,
this
yes.
is what we have to share, which I think, you know, the Afghans kind of were really portraying. Because, you know, what's interesting is, they were pristine when you went in the 70s, but they didn't seem to, from your stories, I don't get the sense that they were afraid of people coming to their communities. Yeah.
You were a guest in their community, and that's how they treated you, with honor and respect, and expected the same from anybody who came. And, you know, thank God most of the experiences with other countries had been favorable until everything got turned upside down by the Soviets.
Right.
I got another story from this book for you.
Okay.
Okay. So I went to one of my Afghan friends, and I told him that I want to rent a house. So he said, okay, I'll help you out. I said, good. So he sent one of his emissaries, or his whatever you want to call that, one of his employees, if you will,
okay.
to help me out to do this. Well, this guy took one look at me and fell in love with me, like, you know, instantly.
Okay.
And he was convinced that I was going to marry him.
Okay.
That he was going to marry me. He was totally convinced of this.
Okay.
And every time we had to meet to go to look at something, you know, he's getting closer and closer. and he's using all this flowery language.
Wait, Kat, can I interrupt for one sec? We have a caller, and they got their hand up. I'd love to hear what the audience wants to share.
Okay,
I'm going to bring it on. And they're from Canada. All right, Canada 905, you're on the air with Kat Parenti. What's up?
Goldie, how are you?
Hey, Daddy!
This is Kat Parenti, right?
Kat Parenti,
yes.
Say hi, yeah.
How are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm wonderful, thank you. Sorry, I dropped into the show very late. But I get a little bit of the gist on what's going on. And I would really like, because Goldie doesn't have a chat room anymore, which is all good. If I may ask yourself, where you find ourselves heading towards right now?
Regarding Afghanistan?
In the whole grand scheme of things, like with Goldie might help me on this, and if I'm being...
I'm not sure what you're asking.
Well, the commonality that we all that we all have right now, and that we do have conflicts right now, which seem pointless and meaningless, but there are life experiences that we are sharing right now.
Right.
And
I'd like to answer that, Goldie.
Please.
Of course, please.
I would like to answer that, Dennis, by quoting somebody called Grandmother Chandra. And you can look her up on the web, Grandma Chandra. And what she says is, and she's been saying this for about, 10 or 12 years. It's not since yesterday morning.
Right.
That we are all, at this point in time, there are so many light workers, light beings who have come onto the planet, who have manifested their light beingness, that the planet is divided into two spirals. Each spiral is coming to its own conclusion. So that is why, on the one hand, we have more war, more rape, more thievery, more this, more that, more poverty, death, deep, up, 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 on and on.
Right.
And on the other hand, we have such a tremendous, powerful conglomeration of light workers who are spiraling us into the so-called golden age of peace, harmony, and prosperity. And this is what the end times are all about. It's not about Armageddon. It's not about us being wiped off the face of the earth. It is spiraling to our own conclusions, and we all make that soul choice, which spiral we want to be on.
I resonate that with that totally. And I must ask, and your name, I'm sorry, is a little tricky for me.
It's Kat, just like the animal.
Exactly.
Kat?
Kat.
Just like
a
the
kitty cat?
Okay, Kat's easy. Okay.
Yeah.
Kat, then let me ask you, how come there's got to be a division or a separation within lightworkers and the way it's just going and the ones that are asleep, if I may say so in that manner?
Well, everyone has a free will choice, Dennis dear, and it depends on what we choose. And no one, not even, again, quoting Grandma Chandra, creative source can interfere with the free will. Now, what she does say is that when these spirals come to their own conclusions, that will be the ushering in of the peace and the harmony and the beauty, etc. And she says that 2012, a lot of people are talking about 2012. She says that 2012 is a portal, a doorway, or an opening. And this will again bring onto the planet those who have contracted to come here and to help us.
My hands are buzzing again, Kat.
Oh, I'm sure they are.
Yeah.
So there will be entities per se that will be still asleep when this occurs.
That's possible. Yes.
Actually, my teachers have said that this particular planet, like exactly what Kat said, it's almost like there's essentially two Earths.
Right.
Yep.
They're just at different frequencies.
Yep.
The frequency of the third dimensional Earth is meant to hold duality. There will always be, because Dennis, you have to keep in mind, there are literally endless numbers of entities. We're just the first wave of entities that have gone through the Earth experience, but there are billions, trillions, gazillions of other entities that want to come through and do the same process of playing in duality and physical. And they need a space to do that.
Yeah.
So it's just a letting go and just acknowledging and just that's it. And it will flow as it would normally naturally.
Well, it's about your world or your choices. Your experience and your frequency is all about your free will and your choices. And in your choices, you'll find that you'll be in resonance with others making the same choices, but you can't make those choices for them because some people choose to wake up and some people choose to go through and do it again. And, you know, from an eternal perspective, that's okay.
Yes.
Dennis, listen, wait, as long as you're bringing this up, let me look at July 8th, I know it's a little bit away, Kat's going to be on, and we're going to dedicate an hour of the show to Grandma Chandra. So, but I do want to stay on. I appreciate your call. Always, always appreciate your call, Dennis. But I want to stay on Afghanistan because we're promoting the book and the stories, and I'm all snuggled into my Afghan. Hey, is that where that statement comes from, Kat? An Afghan? Is that...
Well, that's very funny, actually.
Dennis, I'm going to put you on hold. I'm not going to hang up on you. I'm going to just put you on hold. Thank you so much for calling in, babe.
Thank you, Dennis.
Thank you.
Okay. The word Afghan is an adjective and a noun. The Afghans use the word Afghan for a human being. If they want to say... And a dog, they say an Afghan dog. If they want to say a throw or a quilt, they say an Afghan throw or an Afghan quilt. But if you just say the word Afghan, you meet a person. So you have a bunch of guys lying all over you, Goldie?
Right.
Do you?
At the moment, no.
You said you're snuggled into your Afghans.
You know, it's an interesting thing when I have a show with you, kitty cat. I got a kitty cat on the line, and I'm snuggled in an Afghan. Okay, I have an Afghan quilt, yes.
There you go.
And to be honest, it was really the metaphor, meaning, you know, I really am snuggled into the culture tonight. I feel delightful. I hope you do, too, because... It's such a wonderful energy. Also, all right, let's give out, this is a good time, let's give out the name of the website so they can see a lovely, beautiful picture of yourself, and
you
have some pictures up, which is catparenti.com.
Right, that's catparenti.com, and my email address is catparenti@yahoo.com. If anybody cares to email me, you can purchase the book. It's called Afghanistan Blood and Honor through the website. And if you want to take a look at the book before you purchase, you can go to Amazon.com, bring up Afghanistan Blood and Honor, and they have something called Look Inside, where you can see various pages, read some of the stuff, read the front cover, the back cover, and, you know, you'll get an idea.
Indeed. Also, what I wanted to I'm clicking on things, and when I click on things, is it possible this this amazing Microsoft-powered PowerPoint display. Is there any way to get these pictures? I mean, wow, you really just have the culture, you know, so beautifully. I'm a big visual girl. I love the visuals.
So you think I should put them on the website?
If that is possible, I absolutely think you should put them on the website.
Okay.
They're beautiful. They're stories within themselves. I mean, you can see these people's faces, the kids.
Yes.
Because, you know, like I said, the Chai Boys. Tell me about the Chai Boys.
Oh, the Chai Boys. Okay. Well, the population of Afghanistan, you have different groups there, just like you have in the United States. We have Italians, Greeks, Jews, Chinese, whatever.
Okay.
In Afghanistan, you have different groups of people also.
Okay.
Now, let's say, you know, the biggest group are the Pashtuns. The second biggest group are the Tajiks, which are basically Indo-Europeans. The Pashtuns are European Mediterraneans, let's put it that way. They're like the Italians, the Spaniards, and the Portuguese. The Tajiks are Indo-Europeans. They have anywhere from 1% to, I don't know, 90%, let's say, of Asiatic or Mongol blood. Because remember, Genghis Khan conquered Afghanistan.
Oh,
and
okay,
then,
now this is ancient, though, right? I mean, that's thousands of years ago?
Stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, 700, 800, 900. You know, somewhere in there.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay.
I'm not really good on dates.
Okay. No problem. No problem.
But somewhere there.
Okay.
The Chai Boys belong to a group of people called the Hazara. Hazar means 1,000, and these are the descendants of Genghis Khan, who came into northern Afghanistan, destroyed the Buddhist community that existed there, and just laid waste and pillage to the whole place. And he, before he left, he installed 1,000 of his troops to intermarry with the local population and, you know, become part of Afghanistan. So these guys, the Hazaras, are part of the descendants. Well, not part. Yeah, they're the descendants of Genghis Khan, many generations later, obviously.
Right.
And there was a big war between the Pashtuns and the Hazaras. They were both very, very powerful groups, like just say the Democrats and Republicans.
Okay.
And there was a big war between them, and the Pashtuns won. So these guys were kind of pushed back into the desert-like areas and the cave-like areas of Afghanistan.
Okay.
And they haven't regained their former glory, so to speak.
Okay.
So these guys hold what we would consider menial positions in the society. Now, every Afghan kid, whether it's a boy or a girl, from the age of 6 or 7, becomes a grown-up instantly, and they assume the duties of either their fathers or their mothers.
Okay.
And these kids serve in the tea houses. They serve tea. Tea is called chai, and that's why they're called the Chai Boys. Now, these kids, in addition to that, they're selling other things like pickled vegetables, like you know how we have here pickled beets or pickles.
Yeah.
Well, they're
yeah.
serving also the equivalent of that. And then they make a stew of different parts of the cows, because there's lamb and there's cow, but there's more lamb than anything. So different parts of the lamb they make a stew out of, and people who are laborers in any aspect, whatever that is, the bricklayers or the carriers or the porters or the whatever they are, they come and for like 2 cents they can get a dish of this stew. And for another cent, they can get some pickled stuff. And another cent, they can get some tea. So that's the function of these kids here.
Wow. No. So what is the government in Afghanistan? Is it democracy? Or I don't know what it is. I mean, I guess there's a king there?
Yep.
So what is that?
There used to be a king. Then there was a president. Then there was a succession of Soviet puppets.
Okay.
Then there was the freaking Taliban. No, then there was the Mujahideen, which are Afghan fighters. Then there was the Taliban. And now we're back to a president who has somewhat democratic views.
Wow. So this is clearly – now, Afghanistan is a country to itself, correct?
Yes.
So this is a country kind of looking for its identity from a government standpoint? Would that be accurate?
Absolutely, because when the king ruled, the king was more remote than God, who touched their lives five times a day through prayer.
Right.
The king was a figurehead, and the people in the old 4 mile square in the capital, they related to the king. The rest of the country, they had their chiefs, like my husband, one of my husbands I told you about.
Right.
But, yeah. Okay. They had their chiefs. They had their tribal elders. So, you know, they didn't bother with the king. And if anybody tried to levy taxes, they revolted. So basically they lived like they've lived for thousands of years by themselves in these areas. It's like 90% agricultural anyway, the whole country. So now through a series of, you know, successive rulers, whether they be good or bad, now they've come to the point that they have Hamid Karzai. And, you know, it's supposed to be a democracy. There's voting and stuff like that.
Right. Now, because let me ask you a question, and I know this might be in the book or not, but, all right, we have 8 minutes left. Can you share with us some of the things that might be, not propaganda, but some truths about Afghanistan today that we might not get off of the CNN?
Absolutely.
Because I think, you know what I mean? I want to honor the country. Because are you still, like, how often are you going to Afghanistan at present?
Oh, the last time I was there was in early 90s. Haven't been since then.
It's been a while. Okay. But I'm assuming all your connections, you still stay connected to it, or no?
I'm sorry, you cut out. I'm still what?
Are you still close with your connections that you made in Afghanistan, the people?
Well, I'm close. I'm more close to the Afghan community here than anyone else.
And are they traveling still back and forth to Afghanistan?
Some of them are, yes.
Okay.
Some of them have gone there to, you know, like, see what's happened to their homes, their relatives, their lands.
Yeah.
Some have restarted businesses there. Absolutely.
Okay. So what could you share that, like I said, that the average person would not have access to?
Well, what I found was that it was basically, now remember, I'm talking about before the Soviets and everything, but I'll give you two stories real quick, and that's probably going to do it for us. Story number one is the fact that it was a matriarchal culture. The women made all the major decisions. The men were the figureheads. Yes, the man decided whether he was going to open up the barber shop or the tea shop or the restaurant today. And he, you know, among his male friends, they talked about, I'm not going to say sports because they really didn't have sports like Americans have sports.
Okay.
But, you know, they talked about men stuff, guy stuff, okay?
Okay.
Whereas the women made all the major decisions. They decided how many children they would have. They knew herbs to take if they didn't want to conceive. They would designate what education each child would have. Okay, you're going to be the embroiderer. You're going to be the woodcutter. You're going to be the singer, whatever it is. And
really?
They would train. Yeah, they would train their children accordingly.
Okay.
They decided what level of education the child needed to have, depending on the status of society.
Okay.
And they arranged all of the marriages. There's
the wife did?
The wife arranged, the women arranged the marriages. The men are the figureheads. Again, I'm going to bring you back to that family in Moonstruck, that Italian family where, you know, the father supposedly was the head of the household and his wife confronts him because he's been having an affair. And she says, I want you to stop seeing so-and-so, blah, blah, blah. And he gets up, and he looks like he's about to kill her, and he slams his hand on the table. And he says, okay, and sits down.
Well, and if you think about it, too, did you see the movie My Big Fat Greek Wedding?
Yeah, see?
Same principle where they were like, listen, your father thinks he makes the decisions.
Yeah.
But we know it's me. And the mother helped the girl get the job that she wanted to at the travel agency. Okay. See, that's interesting.
It's same
indeed.
Thing. It's
same principle.
Matriarchal Mediterranean culture. The Italians are the same. My mother always gave lip service. Oh, my father. No, you have to ask your father. He's the boss. Ha, ha, ha. You know?
Right. Behind closed doors. Right.
Right. So it's
right.
The same thing in Afghanistan. So that was then. Now I'm going to give you a current picture.
Okay.
So about 2 years ago, a German, I think the man was a German, he went over to Afghanistan after the Taliban were overthrown.
Okay, wait. Come closer to your phone base. Your phone is going out a little bit.
Oh, maybe because the battery, it's my cell phone. How's
oh,
it better?
Okay.
Is it
better? You're good now. Yeah, yep,
okay,
yep.
Good. Okay, so this German guy goes over to Afghanistan a couple of years ago when the Taliban were thrown over, and
okay.
He decides to make a film about, you know, what's going on with people. So
right.
He shows this. He shows women without the chadori walking around. He shows beauty parlors opening up. He shows schools, girls and boys are going to school, wonderful, wonderful. And then he decides to interview an ex-Taliban. And guess what this guy decided to do? He opened up a school to teach women how to drive.
A driving school, wow.
For women.
Specifically.
A Taliban. I mean, this is... Okay, so now here's the fun part. I understand their language, right? So this, the German obviously doesn't understand it. He's just videoing this guy sitting in the car, and there's a woman driver. But see, I understand the language. So I'm laughing myself senseless because this is what the woman, and the German's going, see, and this ex-Taliban now has a driving school, and there he teaches women to drive. And I'm listening to what the Afghans are saying, and she's going the equivalent of, you stupid son of a bitch, why do you have me driving in the traffic here? I should be out on the open plains. Don't you have any brains at all?
So it doesn't sound like she was being suppressed at all. I mean, it does sound like
so.
Yeah, not at all.
Why? The guy, you know, the ex-Taliban, he looks at her, and I swear to God, it was just like this before, and it's just like this now. He looks at her, and he goes, oh, my sister, have patience, my dear sister. And she's swearing up a storm.
Oh, my. Now, was it before that women could not drive? Is this something new, women driving in Afghanistan?
Funny. There were no cars.
I was just about to say that. I realized after I asked. Cars were... So it was basically, you know, camels, horses, that kind of transportation?
Camels, horses, and feet.
And feet.
Yeah, feet
wow.
were the biggest.
Wow.
Yeah, feet were the biggest.
Right. Well, and that, you know, makes sense if we're living in the space that we're doing from the 12th century. I mean...
Absolutely.
That would be incongruency.
Yes, definitely.
Well, Kat, it has been an absolute delight and pleasure spending this evening with you on so many levels. Thank you. Thank you. I truly just love you. And everybody, you can go right to purchase the book on the episode page, Afghanistan Blood and Honor. It will take you right to Amazon.com.
Yep.
This radio show will be archived within 5 minutes of after it ends. So Dennis is still on the line. If you want to listen to the beginning, you can hear some fabulous stories about Kat's experiences and life, personal life experiences of living in Afghanistan. And I'm honored to have anyone on the show that just lives their soul purpose. Kat, I'm honored to have you here.
Thank you, my dear.
Oh, thank you. Many more. We have so many more things to happen.
We sure do. Absolutely.
We do. And just so everybody knows, Kat will be back on July 8th to share a whole nother avenue of her life, her exquisite daughter, which is a miracle in and of unto itself. So we will discuss that. But she'll also be back on because Afghanistan should be spoken about periodically forever. I mean, yes. Kat, you're always welcome here anytime you want to share, anytime.
Thank you so much, Goldie, dear.
So much love to you.
See you soon, hon.
You
much
got it,
love.
All right. Everybody have an amazing week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.